This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Deadly train derailment. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka, on this Tuesday, December 19. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
A passenger train south of Seattle jumped the tracks, doing 80 in a 30-mile-an-hour zone. At least three people were killed. Train cars toppled off an overpass to a freeway below.
Saying we will stand up for our country like we have never stood up before, President Trump unveiled his new national security strategy.
The House is set to vote on tax reform legislation this afternoon, with the Senate to follow. Tax breaks could become law by the end of the week.
And manufacturers trying to recruit new workers are using a new strategy, hosting Parents Night.
They're having trouble getting young people to go into the profession. So for years, they've tried to go into schools. They talk to the teachers. They'll host field trips. But they've realized that it doesn't matter how excited they get the kids about a manufacturing career if the parents aren't on board.
Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Levitz on the new recruiting strategy on factory floors. She's here in about 20 minutes. Deadly Amtrak derailment in Washington State. A train making its inaugural run from Seattle to Portland, Oregon, jumped the tracks doing 80 miles an hour in a 30-mile-an-hour zone yesterday, killing three people and injuring dozens of others. Passenger cars tumbled from an overpass onto Interstate 5 below. 13 of the train's 14 cars jumped the tracks near the town of DuPont. Amtrak said there were 86 aboard, 80 of them passengers. This man watched some of it unfold from his car on the highway.
The trains were precariously halfway on the bridge, halfway off the bridge, so you couldn't go in the doors at the ends. You had to climb in the side of the train where there was broken glass through one of the windows.
Five vehicles and two trucks were involved in the accident. Some motorists were injured, but none died. The derailment happened on the first day Amtrak trains began using the new inland route between the Washington cities of Tacoma and Olympia, part of a $181 million project to cut travel time. Sound Transit, which owns the track, said it had recently been upgraded to also handle passenger trains, not just freight trains. Declaring that economic security is national security, President Trump introduced his new national security strategy.
With every decision and every action, we are now putting America first.
During his nearly half-hour speech yesterday, the president recounted a year of stock market gains and drops in the unemployment rate. He said any nation that trades away its prosperity for security will end up losing both.
We face rogue regimes that threaten the United States and our allies. We face terrorist organizations, transnational criminal networks, and others who spread violence and evil around the globe.
Mr. Trump alleged that his predecessors prioritized nation-building abroad over economic growth at home. He said his new national security strategy included plans for cutting taxes, rebuilding roads and bridges, and building a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. The White House's new national security strategy, mandated by Congress, calls for strengthening the U.S. military by expanding missile defense capabilities and adding to the nuclear weapons arsenal. The national security document, said to run 70 pages, is more than twice as long as the previous strategy document published by the Obama administration back in 2015. It's an attempt to flesh out the president's vision of U.S. foreign policy, which he has shorthanded as America First. More from Jamie McIntyre, author of the Daily on Defense newsletter at the Washington Examiner. Jamie, set this up.
What we're seeing here is the president's vision for how foreign policy should go, as interpreted by his aides on the National Security Council, notably H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, and some of the other folks. What they did basically was they took what President Trump said, sometimes in a very colloquial and informal way, and translated it into a more formal document that actually is a document required by Congress of every administration. laying out the strategy. And it's different from the last national security strategy, which came under the Obama administration in 2015, in a couple of ways. One is it puts much more emphasis on protecting the homeland, including strengthening the border, and of course President Trump's pet project, the border wall. But also it looks at both adversaries and allies as, you know, economic competitors. And there's a lot more focus on making sure that the United States is operating on an equal footing with trading partners. So there's a lot more talk about economic warfare, protecting the U.S. Innovation base, as they called it. So there's a different emphasis in it. And, of course, it also looks at the major threats that Donald Trump inherited, Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, and the threat of terrorism.
How much different is it from what former President Obama had put together in terms of deal with entities like China, Russia, Iran?
Well, the Trump administration would argue that this is a little more clear-eyed and realistic, a little more pragmatic, and puts U.S. Interests in foremost in any relationship. So, for instance, President Trump has put more pressure on NATO to pay its fair share, more pressure on allies to share more of the burden in countering North Korea. But in many ways, it's similar to the strategy that the U.S. has employed. But again, it's what he called it's guided by what he called principle realism, it's just the idea again is to take what the president has called America first. He's always going to put America first and translate it into a document. The thing to understand about the national security strategy is a lot of times it hasn't gotten much attention because it's almost like a term paper assigned by Congress that each administration has to turn in.
All right.
But it does set a tone for how policy is going to be set. There's not a lot of specifics in here. There's a lot of talk about, you know, rebuilding the military and reestablishing America's influence. And what we'll see, there's a series of additional strategy documents that will be produced in the next year that'll flesh out some of this with more details. Typically these documents are just sent up to the Hill. The president giving his speech was the first president to really roll it out personally and sort of put his own stamp on it. And I think it's because the president really wanted to make a point that he feels he's doing things differently.
We're speaking with Jamie McIntyre, author of the Daily on Defense newsletter for the Washington Examiner. We're talking about President Trump's new national security strategy. Is this an adjustable document, or do you do this once for your term in office?
Well, it's the thing about this document is it's more a recognition of what the president's team has done in the past year. It's not like they signed the strategy and now they're going to implement it.
Okay.
Really, what they're talking about in this document is what they've tried to do over the past year and how that's going to guide them going forward. And it's not it's nothing that's set so much in stone that you can't change anything. There's a lot of wiggle room in it because it's just a broad, overarching document.
Thanks, Jamie. Jamie McIntyre, author of the Daily on Defense newsletter at the Washington Examiner. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, glad you could be with us. Welcome into Tuesday. The Trump administration has publicly blamed North Korea for the so-called WannaCry cyber attack that crippled hospitals, banks, and other companies across the globe earlier this year. More from This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Tom Bossert, Homeland Security Advisor to President Trump, wrote in a piece published last night in the Wall Street Journal that North Korea's malicious behavior is growing more egregious. A hacking entity known as Lazarus Group, which works on behalf of the North Korean government, is said to have carried out the WannaCry attack. Lazarus Group is also widely believed to have been responsible for the 2014 hack of Sony Pictures that leaked corporate communications. Pyongyang has repeatedly denied responsibility. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. The White House was expected to follow up today with a more formal statement blaming Pyongyang, according to a senior administration official who spoke to Reuters. This portion of the program is brought to you by Pro Flowers. Are you looking to send something special to someone you won't be able to see during the holidays? A little something more than a card? Well, a bouquet or festive plant from Pro Flowers is perfect because it's not the same old traditional gift, and it says so much more.
No matter what you choose, our listeners get 20% off any ProFlowers bouquet or plant of $29 or more. ProFlowers bouquets and plants are guaranteed to stay fresh, and you control the delivery date. To get 20% off all bouquets of $29 or more this holiday season, go to proflowers.com and use my code FIRSTNEWS at checkout. Come on, you're not going to do the gift card thing again, are you? Think outside the box. Proflowers.com. My experience, professional gift box, on-time delivery, eye-popping colors, and these flowers last. Again, for 20% off all bouquets of $29 or more, visit proflowers.com and use the code FIRSTNEWS. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Gordon, local officials had been expressing concerns about the safety of the new Amtrak project through their towns, and their worst fears were realized when an Amtrak train derailed in DuPont, Washington, on its inaugural run on a faster route from Seattle to Portland, Oregon. The event data recorder shows Amtrak Cascades 501 was traveling 80 miles per hour in a 30-mile track when it careened off a bridge onto a major highway, killing at least three riders and sending dozens to local hospitals. Horrified motorists on crowded Interstate 5 jumped out of their cars to assist, helpless to do more than comfort those pinned under the train until aid arrived. Jay Summerlin of West Pierce Fire and Rescue says his team used all their training.
It took a lot of extrication tools. It wasn't easy for the firefighters to get through. They were using jaws of life. They were using air chisels and different forms of saws to be able to get into some of the crushed cars to get access to people and get them out.
13 of the train's 14 cars jumped the tracks. No surprise, the U.S. exercised its veto power to block a U.N. resolution condemning President Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
The fact that this veto is being done in defense of American sovereignty and in defense of America's role in the Middle East peace process is not a source of embarrassment for us. It should be an embarrassment to the remainder of the Security Council.
U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley. A 200-page review of how first responders handled the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting critiques how they handled it. The Department of Justice's community-oriented policing services finds local law enforcement's followed department procedure for a hostage situation in waiting several hours to enter. But policies need to be updated as terror attacks escalate. The 2016 attack left 49 dead. A terrible reminder of the dangers of unattended holiday candles. Three young children and their mother died Monday in a fire that roared through their Brooklyn, New York home on the sixth night of Hanukkah. And firefighters are investigating whether the blaze was touched off by the family's menorah. Are you glad we all exist? Thank a mushroom. Researchers at Leeds University in Britain grew plants and fungi under lab conditions replicating the environment on early Earth to find fungi were essential to the development of an oxygen-rich environment.
Wow.
Don't pick out the mushrooms.
Right. Recommended for Philly cheesesteaks, right?
Anything will help.
Okay. You don't like Philly cheesesteaks?
The gut bomb, baby.
What?
It's so,
you're a Philly area resident.
It's so much.
Wow.
Don't hate me.
I can't believe what I just heard. Thank you, Rasa. 23 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. In a time when many parents are worried about the cost of college, employers are spreading the message that teens with skills to fix machinery or design products are highly valued, and the companies will even pay for them to attend school. Still, barriers to persuading parents can be high, given some skepticism about manufacturing as a stable career. Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Levitz says to attract America's youth onto the factory floor, manufacturers are now targeting parents. Jennifer, what have you found?
So manufacturers have are reporting hundreds of thousands of openings, and they're having trouble getting young people to go into the profession. And so for years they've tried to go into schools. They talk to the teachers. They'll host field trips, that kind of thing, and they want to get the kids excited about it. But they've realized that it doesn't matter how excited they get the kids about a manufacturing career if the parents aren't on board. So they are now targeting the parents and trying to get the parents excited about this as an option for their children.
Wow. You gave an example. Boy, I almost fell off my chair. You point out in Story County, Iowa, where the unemployment rate is 1.4%, must be impossible to find people.
That's right. It's very hard to find people, and at the same time, they have an aging workforce. So they're worried about not just now, but about the pipeline. And yeah. so they're one of these places that this year held their first parents' night, where parents can come out on an evening or a Saturday, and they tour the plant, and they talk to employees there. And you know, one of the big things they're trying to do is change what they see as a common misperception among parents about manufacturing. They've done surveys. Manufacturing groups have done surveys that show parents think of this field as grimy and you know, dirty and low paying and not particularly challenging, lots of like pushing buttons. And so they're trying to show them that today's plant is not that. It's often involves computer skills, and they can be quite, you know, brightly lit and light and sometimes very well paying.
Yeah. I was reading a couple of comments to the story, and at least a couple of people had said, you know, hey, listen, manufacturing, you want the best and the brightest, start paying more. You know, and others jumped on and said, you know, it's not that simple, but kind of, I don't know, lay the landscape right now if you can for kind of where manufacturing is, because I think you said 400,000 openings in the story.
Yeah, 400,000 openings they're reporting, and they have started hiring more, but the question for them is one that is across the board in every industry right now, that is that even though a lot of employers are struggling to hire, people have been kind of puzzled as to why wages haven't risen more. And so you can certainly lump manufacturers in there, that they could, you know, that's one way to get more people in, is to raise wages. But that said, compared to a lot of regular jobs, they are comparable in many ways to what you might get as a, you know, 20-something coming out of college, which I think some people are surprised about.
Thanks, Jennifer. Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Levitz. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Give your employees the power to do their best work and maximize this year's budget when you update to new, powerfully performing Dell Business PCs with Intel Core processors. Dell's dedicated small business advisors mean you'll always get the best deal on the right solution for your business. Get up to 35% off select business PCs now until the end of December. Did I mention there's free shipping? Visit Dell.com/small business or call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Tuesday, December 19. Welcome in Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's filling in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Train derailment in Washington State kills three, injures dozens. House expected to pass tax reform today. Trump unveils his national security strategy. The federal court nominee, skewered by the Senate Judiciary Committee for his lack of experience, has withdrawn from consideration. Rangers pitcher Cole Hamels and his wife are donating their $9.4 million mansion and land in Missouri to children with special needs. The movie Titanic was released 20 years ago today. And the passenger stranded in Atlanta Sunday who just started walking. That story in about 20 minutes. Financial advisors and accountants are working overtime as many U.S. taxpayers scramble to pay the rest of their 2017 taxes before January 1st, when the proposed Republican tax overhaul would sharply cut the amount they can deduct on federal tax bills. More from Elizabeth Diltz, wealth correspondent at Reuters. Elizabeth, what's up here?
People are really going to be talking with their accountants and their financial advisors a lot between now and New Year's to make sure that they take as many of the deductions that could benefit them this year that are going to go away next year if the tax reform bill does in fact get passed this week. So the big one is the state and local income taxes and property taxes, which if you itemize, those benefits will be limited to $10,000 next year and in the foreseeable future. So most people take about $27,000 worth of deductions, among them many state and local and property tax deductions. So a lot of people who do itemize their taxes are going to try to get their 2017 taxes all wrapped up and paid before January 1st.
Okay, with the thought being there, explain the strategy, I guess.
The idea is that any check you write in 2018, it's not crystal clear that you will still be able to capitalize on the 2017 deductions. So when you itemize your taxes, you actually pay it in four installments, and technically the last check is due on January 15th, 2018. So basically, this is your last window, people are telling me, for you to make sure that you get the maximum amount of deductions and save the maximum amount that you can on your federal tax bill by getting those state and local income taxes in before the end of this year.
Wow. We're speaking with Elizabeth Diltz, wealth correspondent at Reuters, about her story entitled U.S. Taxpayers Rush to Claim Deductions Under Threat from Tax Bill. What else are some of these experts saying?
So the other thing is that there had been a little bit of concern and questions from taxpayers calling their state and local tax centers and asking, should I pay my 2018 property taxes or my 2018 state and local income taxes now for next year? And it sounds strange that people would be eager to prepay their taxes.
Right.
But the idea, again, was that they wanted to get the most deductions that they could before those deductions go away if this tax reform bill is passed. Congress issued guidance on late Friday night that makes it look like you maybe don't want to do that. Again, you should consult a CPA, you should call a financial advisor to be sure, but the advice from Congress was that if you pay any 2018 taxes in 2017, you cannot claim a deduction on that. So it's not crystal clear if that applies to property taxes, but they said explicitly if you pay your state or local income taxes for 2018 this year, you won't be able to get a deduction on that.
Wow.
Next year.
Are people paying for this guidance ahead of time too? Like, coughing up, I don't know, $50-$100 to the professional at this point to get the guidance, and then we'll pay for tax preparation services in the spring?
Absolutely. And that's actually another deduction you may want to claim this year if you can.
Yeah.
So if you are somebody who has sought, professional advice from a public accountant or from a tax attorney, or if you have a financial advisor who helps you prepare this kind of stuff, that tax deduction will go away in 2018 if this tax reform is passed. So definitely want to claim that deduction in 2017 as well if you can. And that also extends to if you buy your own tax preparation software, like Intuit or something. You can claim a deduction on that this year, and you definitely should if you can.
We've had lack of clarity the past couple of years, right, with maybe a couple of items here and there that Congress renews or doesn't renew, but nothing like this in, 30-something years, right?
This is definitely the biggest tax reform since the 80s. So this is the biggest time, this is the most substantial reform that we've had in decades. And the idea that it is coming down the pipeline just 2 weeks before it could potentially take effect has really caused a lot of consternation among the financial services industry, among the payroll industry as well, as people want to make sure they understand exactly what taxes they should pay, what deductions they should claim, and for companies, what withholdings they should take from people's paychecks as well. So it's really caused a shakeup for a lot of people as they rush to make sure they understand this.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Diltz, wealth correspondent at Reuters. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we all have a few words and phrases that make us shudder when we hear them, whether it be in person, in print, or online. But as it turns out, A simple whatever will make our blood boil the most. That's according to the annual Marist College poll of the most annoying words and phrases. The shoulder-shrugging whatever continues to annoy Americans more than any other, but fake news is coming on strong. Whatever takes the top spot for the ninth straight year, the pick for a full one-third of poll respondents who were given five choices. The recent edition, fake news, was slightly ahead of no offense, but for second place, and about 1 in 10 found literally to be the most grating, as did a similar number for you know what I mean.
Oh, really?
Yes, I think I'm guilty of that one. The you know what I mean, I think that one creeps in a little too often for me.
The whatever.
Yeah.
9 years in a row.
Yes.
So I want you to imagine that being said by a teenage girl with an attitude to end an argument.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, which makes me think that it's never going to die, that we're 10 years from now, we're still going to be talking about that, because it's the easiest way for instance, a teenage girl to communicate her feelings.
Right, and that phrase also indicates you have basically given up on the argument.
Yes.
You don't have a comeback.
Yes.
Yeah, that's like the white flag of surrender.
Right.
The other one that has been on my list for years, it is what it is. Or at the end of the day.
At the end of the day.
At the end of the day, I don't mind that too much, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
That's also another way of saying you're out of answers to something. Yeah.
Yeah. They only ask people five different ones. I'm guessing if they did six and seven, those two would probably be on there.
Yeah.
And good news, Gordon, for Christmas revelers in Rhode Island. The dead tree at the State House is being replaced. Governor Gina Raimondo announced that a new tree is coming and her staff plans the switch as soon as possible. The move comes 3 days after the Associated Press reported Friday on the tree's sorry condition, including bare branches and needles that dropped instantly when touched. Raimondo said she wasn't sure why the tree had made national headlines. Well, maybe it's because this isn't the first time the Rhode Island State House tree has caused some trouble.
Uh-oh.
In 2005, it shed its needles after being doused in fire retardant. In 2012, former Governor Lincoln Chafee refused to call it a Christmas tree and called it a holiday tree instead, leading to angry protests. And last year, the first tree selected was removed after staff decided it was too puny.
Ah.
I remember doing that story around this time last year. Now, it seems to me that in New England, it shouldn't be this hard to find a good Christmas tree.
A hearty tree,
yes.
Right, where the weather is cold.
You're just surrounded by trees.
Right.
I don't understand this.
I don't understand either. But and I remember Lincoln Chafee calling that the holiday tree. I remember the uproar over that.
Yeah, that caused a bit of a problem.
So perhaps Governor Raimondo now understands why Christmas trees at the State House in Rhode Island make national news.
Exactly.
Because the history over the past 12 years or so is not so good.
No, not so much. Next year, we're going to do better.
Right. Not puny. Not just holiday related. Not falling down.
These really aren't tough requirements.
Right. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. The agreement Republicans reached on almost $1.5 trillion of tax cuts will lower tax rates for every income group, but tax reductions won't be universal. Some tax breaks have vanished. Others have received limits. The Wall Street Journal has a list. On the real estate front, married couples selling a home can continue to exclude from taxes $500,000 if the seller has lived there for two of the previous 5 years. Also, alimony will no longer be deductible or taxable. The provision would take effect beginning in 2019. You can also still deduct medical expenses. The agreement expands the medical expense deduction for 2 years, retroactive to this year, and returns to the current law after that. What about if you sell stocks next year? Do you have to sell the lowest price shares first and get hit with a higher capital gains tax? No, you've been spared from that proposal. Also, the Senate had proposed raising taxes on certain stock sales and taking away investors' ability to choose which shares to sell. That's the break you're getting. You will not have to unload the oldest shares first. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is back with more of America's First News.
Well, Gordon, train cars dangling from a highway overpass, others strewn across the roadway. Horrific images from yesterday's derailment of a high-speed Amtrak train in Washington State. Three riders are confirmed dead with dozens injured. NTSB board member Bella Dinzar says the investigator in charge has obtained a download of the event data recorder from the rear locomotive.
Preliminary indications are that the train was traveling at 80 miles per hour in a 30-mile-per-hour track.
One car and a locomotive fell onto the northbound lanes of Interstate 5, closing the highway for the foreseeable future. President Trump used the event in a tweet as an example of why lawmakers should approve his infrastructure plan, but the Twitterverse swiftly condemned him for not immediately mentioning the victims and for what many considered politicizing the event. The president's new national security strategy renews the America First message of his campaign and stresses strong, fair trade, military might, and strong borders.
We are reasserting these fundamental truths. A nation without borders is not a nation.
In his speech to cabinet members and military officials, he also faulted his predecessors for failing to prioritize the nation's citizens. Congress is expected to vote today on a plan that would slash the federal corporate tax rate to 21% from 35%. Maine Senator Susan Collins says she will vote yes on the overhaul, the final confirmation that there is not a single no vote on the Republican side of the aisle in the Senate. In the House, it's a different story. New York Congressman Dan Donovan.
I'm still going to be a no. The changes in the SALT deduction actually don't satisfy the needs of the people that I represent. It's still a bill that's going to give tax relief to other parts of America on the backs of New Yorkers. And so I'm still going to vote no.
British police arrested a man they say tried to force his way onto a British airbase that's been used by the U.S. military for decades. RAF Mildenhall, southeast of London, briefly put on lockdown yesterday after the man tried to bypass a checkpoint. He is in custody. Rebooting a hit TV series of the past is all the rage now, and sources tell TV line NBC is looking to bring back The Office for a limited run next year. With so many of the original cast moving on to movie careers, the series will reportedly focus on a mix of old and new characters. Notably, Steve Carell would not be back as boss Michael Scott.
Oh.
I know.
Is it really The Office then?
Is it really must-see TV? I don't know.
That one I really liked, and I was a latecomer to that, so I'm way behind on all the episodes, so there's still lots of potential for me with The Office. And with this reboot, I'd be interested, but without Steve Carell...
You know, so you're going to finish watching all your reruns, or are you?
I don't know. Now I'm really down.
I'm really down
on the whole thing now.
I'm sorry, Bunky.
Not sure. 6 minutes now in front of the hour.
Have a cookie.
You may be aware that Colorado State played in the New Mexico Bowl on Saturday, and afterward the players were released to return home to their families for the Christmas break. For freshman offensive lineman Luis LeBron, that meant a cross-country trip to Jacksonville, Florida. And like many a trip cross-country, that required a stop at Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. That quickly turned into a problem when the entire airport shut down due to a power outage on Sunday. Mr. LeBron started walking about 6 miles looking for a hotel before he ran into a reporter from the local Fox affiliate.
I'd like to say tonight I've walked around 6 miles.
All right.
I've been to 7 different hotels. They're all booked.
How about that? He would later tweet, "I'm safe and sound now. Everything's been taken care of. Thank you to all the kind people and fans that offered help. God bless you all. And Merry Christmas." It's quite the walk. For Rasa K, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.